You're listening to 2A Radio with Bill Carnes.
Attached to us.
Well, good morning to all of my lovely RBN listeners out there. Today we're going to spend a little bit of time dealing with the coroner's inquest in Las Vegas. Now, Eric Scott is the guy who was gunned down by three Las Vegas Metro cops on July 10th of this year outside of a Costco in the Summerlin area of Las Vegas, which the Summerlin area is a nice area of town. That very same Costco is the one I have historically shopped at, as well as several other people that I know. It's a nice area of town. It's a nice Costco. So Eric Scott is a guy who was in there with his fiance. They were looking to move in together. They were there buying some stuff. Eric Scott's digging around, trying to find some reusable sports bottles that'll fit in his own cooler. And some employee didn't like him trying to do that, so they got into a discussion. As he's bending down and lifting up and moving stuff around, his shirt shows he's got a gun with a holster in it in his waistband. So then the somebody who's another employee, some security officer or something, somebody at Costco called the cops. I think security was dealing with Eric Scott. It was a different employee. They won't release the names of who these people are. A different employee who called 911 and told them there's a guy who's freaking out in Costco and he's got a gun and he's refusing to leave. That's what Metro got. I played the actual recording of the police audio tapes. Now, the police haven't released the radio traffic tapes, but there's an independent group that acquires that. What they do is they record all police traffic across the country in areas where it's not scrambled or otherwise encoded. Las Vegas Metro does not have that technology. It's old school. As long as you know the frequency, you can listen in to all the different radio traffic. This is the group that provided this information. I played it on the show, gosh, probably 5 or 6 weeks ago, I'm guessing. In chronological order, not real time, because there were some, you know, moments where there was, you know, a fair amount of pause in between, but we did actually hear it. And Las Vegas Metro was really planning on having somebody who was going to be an active shooter. They had the watch commander coming up from another area town, lieutenant, couple of sergeants, all kinds of cops, canine officers. They dispatched the helicopter over there, all before anybody'd ever come into contact with Eric Scott that day. They were setting up a command post about a block and a half away, so that they could have a command post with all of this brass there so they could deal with what they thought was going to be a barricaded subject, active shooter, hostages in Costco on a busy Saturday afternoon, whatever it was. So the person who was reporting all of this, the 911 caller in Costco, was really starting to set the stage on this. Then the 911 call taker was taking that evidently to another level, giving that information to the dispatcher, who was then broadcasting it out over the air with additional information, every level making it bigger and badder than it was. Some guy just wanted to see if his sports bottles were going to fit into his little collapsible cooler for when he went hiking. That's it. That's all he wanted to do. As it turns out, that got him killed. So the coroner's inquest process that I was invited to by Eric Scott's father, Bill Scott himself. He asked me if I would be down there to view the coroner's inquest process. I accepted. I said I would. I arranged to do it. And then some things came up in my schedule. I was not able to get down there and do that. However, Jim Dunsing, good friend of mine, colleague, firearms instructor, also an attorney registered in Nevada through the Nevada Bar Association, and who also just not quite a year ago, 10 or 11 months ago, himself was shot by a Las Vegas Metro cop because Jim wanted to have a conversation with the cop where the cop didn't want to have the conversation, so he tased Jim. After that tasing, Jim ran away because he has a heart condition, and the cop didn't like him running, so he shot Jim 3 times and sent him to the hospital. So that's who we have coming up on the phone after the break. Is going to be giving us a rundown from having been at the coroner's inquest himself. So stay tuned. It's going to be a heck of a show today. You're listening live right here to Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
It's not an option. It's a right. Cocked, locked, and ready to rock the world of the anti-gunners. You are listening to the guy who had to register his mouth as a full auto weapon. Bill Carnes and Two-Way Radio. The fight for your rights isn't for pansies. So buckle up for the ride and knuckle down with Bill Carnes and 2A Radio.
All right, all right. So yesterday on the show, we talked about how the coroner's inquest in the Eric Scott homicide was beginning as of yesterday morning at 10 a.m. local time in Las Vegas. Now, Eric Scott, as you will remember if you've listened to the show for any length of time, on July 10th of this year, was shot and killed by three Metro cops outside of a Costco in the Summerlin area of Las Vegas, which is a nicer area of town. Shot dead. They claim that he pulled a gun out. Many, many eyewitnesses have said something to the contrary and said, no, we did not see a gun. Of course, the video cameras somehow incurred some sort of a problem, hard drive, blah, 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 whatever. The father of Eric Scott, a fellow by the name of Bill Scott, and I have been in contact since about a month after Eric was killed by the police. And I spoke to him on the phone a couple of days back, and I told him he had invited me to come to the coroner's inquest to sit in and see what was going on live. I accepted, however, I wasn't able to do that. So, as it turns out, a good friend of mine, you've heard him on the show before, a fellow by the name of Jim Dunsing. Jim is by trade an attorney. I know him because he and I are colleagues as professional firearms trainer. And in addition to that, Jim himself, about 10 months ago or so, was shot by Las Vegas Metro because he didn't want to stand there and get tased by a cop who didn't want to hear Jim's conversation that he was having with the cop himself. So anyhow, Jim was at the coroner's inquest all day yesterday and is calling in with some live reports. I actually got to see it streaming online a bit. Jim, are you there?
Yeah, good morning, Bill.
Now, you were actually shot yourself because you didn't want, the cop that shot you didn't want to have a conversation with you, so he tased you. You ran because of a heart condition from when you were born, and he ended up pulling out his gun and shooting you three times. That was last November, wasn't it? November of 2009?
October 29th.
October 29th. So we are just at about 11 months now, just shy of 11 months.
Yeah, they're about.
Crazy. Well, all right, Jim. So if anybody, you are a professional firearms trainer, you are an attorney admitted in the state of Nevada, and you are also a victim of somebody who's been shot by an overzealous Las Vegas Metro cop. So to have anybody there in the actual coroner's inquest courtroom where this is going on, keep in mind it's not a court proceeding. It's merely a sham of a circus where the district attorney's office, rather than trying to find the truth, what they do is try to prove the officer's case that it's okay that they shot whoever it was they shot and killed them. So we really couldn't have a finer, more qualified person there to actually be there and now reporting back to us on what happened on day one. So, Jim, tell us about this circus.
Well, the circus is a pretty good definition of it. They had four doctors come in. The first person to testify was a medical examiner who actually performed the autopsy on Eric. She described seven bullet wounds, five of which hit him in the back, and the most interesting one to me was one that went in the lower left buttocks of Eric, up through his stomach, and then stopped in his chest. And the only way for that round to go in on that angle would be for Eric to be on the ground.
Interesting. So, and we had eyewitness accounts at the time that Eric was shot several times in the back and after he was on the ground. So it seems as though the pathologist from the coroner's office who actually did the examination on Eric Scott proved that theory that, in fact, he was shot not only in the back but also while he was down.
Right. Well, because it's not much of an adversarial hearing, well, it's not adversarial at all, they didn't focus on the bullet wounds. Instead, they focused on Eric's prescription medication and the fact that he was on a significant amount of painkillers for his spinal problem.
And he
started
go ahead.
In, as a ranger, or rather at West Point, on a parachute job, and then was made worse by a couple of car accidents later in life.
Right. So this, he was on medication and going through different physical therapy as well as on pain meds because of his injuries incurred originally in training in the Army as a West Point student and later in life through car accidents, as you just said. Now, I'm the reason I'm repeating a little bit is the phone connection just a little bit off, so I just want to make sure it's clear for everybody. You know, and I actually had an opportunity to stream 2 or 3 hours worth of the inquest live on the Internet at, let's see, Fox5Vegas.com, F-O-X, the number 5Vegas.com, and they will continue to stream this. And as I understand, they had, what, 15 people on the witness list today? How many did they actually get through?
I believe they got through 5. They got through the medical examiner, and then 3 of their personal physicians, and then 1 Costco employee. All 3 of the physicians testified to the treatment he got and the fact that he was getting prescriptions from them several months prior to this. They had no information regarding the actual incident. The last person they called was a Costco employee who claimed that Eric pulled a gun from his small the back, pointed at one of the officers, and was then shot. She doesn't remember seeing Eric fall or any of the shooting. She ran back inside as soon as that started.
And you know, that's interesting, Jim, because you and I, both having been for many years now professional firearms instructors, the difference between action versus reaction. If someone has a gun on you and you pull a gun out, you're able to fire before they can react to what it is you are doing. But the claim is that he pulled a gun out, but those 3 officers had such unbelievable reflexes that they were actually able to shoot before Eric would have been able to shoot, which is, I mean, the percentages of people with that quick of reflexes is so minuscule, it would be very difficult to believe that a single one of them had that reflex. However, now we're told to believe that all three of those cops had such unbelievable reflexes that they would have been able to fire on Eric before he got the gun out on them, action versus reaction. So that's,
I'm not sure it's as much of a reflex, because they were all, according to the testimony, out at some sort of ready position.
Understood.
They had all guns drawn. What confuses me is if Eric is to pull a gun and actually point at the officer and get shot 7 times, how does he not get a shot off?
Exactly. And that's a very fine question. Now, I found it very interesting that they were interviewing doctors that Eric either had been under the care of at one point in time, and I think, actually, I'm not sure that even a single one of them, maybe the last guy, I think the last doctor who testified, Eric was still under his care, but the other doctors, he was not. And yet they're talking about medical-related things that happened then, when really the case is an individual comes out of the Costco and the cops shoot him dead. What happened right then and there? How his medical history plays into whether or not his rights were violated, whether he was some sort of a homicidal maniac that made a furtive movement to endanger the life or well-being of those police officers or anybody else there in the immediate vicinity of that Costco front entrance. I don't understand how it could possibly come into play unless they're trying to paint Eric Scott in a bad light. Now, that's just my independent observation, Jim. You were there. What do you think?
I largely agree with that assessment. I think their strategy is to make Eric look bad because they don't have much of a case. I mean, you've got a guy that they're going to try to argue that Eric was on pain pills and out of his mind and unable to deal with the cops' communications, and was otherwise just crazy and violent. That kind of fell apart on the stand because none of the doctors supported that idea. The prosecutor was pushing that. So I don't know that it's going to be successful, but it's odd to me that your first day of prosecuting this case is talking about pain pills. Not until 5:30 did we hear anything about Costco or a shooting.
I have to tell you, Jim, what's really interesting to me is we're talking about an assistant district attorney who's the one asking all of these questions in this this circus of a hearing. And what he's done is, rather than try to really find out what the information is, because he obviously cannot prosecute Eric Scott for anything. They don't have any violations of law that he may have done. Even if they did, he's dead, and you can't prosecute someone posthumously. So what they need to look at is the legalities of the officers involved in their shooting, not the history of the victim, other than about the 5 seconds that they had that they had in view personally there with Eric Scott. I mean, even what was happening in the store, all they have is the information based on what was reported by the person reporting in Costco. They certainly can't bring into play anything when it comes to really the anything other than the 5 seconds where he was out front in the store. That's really all they've got. Jim, we're headed up on the first break here, so if you'll hold off on your response to that real quick, we'll get you as soon as we come back from the break. Folks, stay tuned. We are live right now. We're talking with Jim Dunsing, who's at the coroner's inquest for the Eric Scott-involved police homicide. So stay tuned. We'll be back right after the break. You're listening live to Bill Carnes, special guest Jim Dunsing, right here on 2A Radio.
Tell everyone in the room to pipe down. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
And welcome back, everybody. Again, this is a special edition of 2A Radio where we have guest Jim Dunsing on the line. Again, Jim Dunsing was at the Eric Scott Coroner's Inquest hearing live in the actual circus of a courtroom yesterday. Jim, you back with us?
Yes, sir.
Okay, now, we just left the last segment. We were speaking about, I was commenting about how, really, the only thing that the district attorney should have to do is find out, independently, without any sort of prejudice on either side, the legalities of what the cops did when it came to them shooting and killing Eric Scott. If that was legal or not, if that had any sort of legal justification or not. And instead, what's happening is he's trying to paint the deceased, Eric Scott, in a bad light. So it makes it look like, you know, even if the cops didn't do something legal or just, it seems as though, well, you know, they offed somebody who was, you know, other than an upstanding citizen, maybe somebody who wasn't the West Point graduate and a former Army officer in a tank battalion that Eric Scott was, that he wasn't an upstanding member of society, that he wasn't a businessman working for a medical device company at the top of his field. It seems like the whole thing was to really prep everybody for the cops who will probably come in last and try to make them look like the victims themselves. Now, did you get that same thing being in the courtroom and basically seeing all this time wasted talking to former physicians?
Yeah, exactly. And the good news is the physicians that actually treated Eric had almost nothing but good things to say about the guy. One of the guys commented that he's never seen anybody in better shape than Eric, except for some of the performers from Cirque du Soleil.
Really? Interesting. Better physical condition. Excellent.
But what's interesting to me is Metro's investigation. They're able to find sealed divorce records from one of Eric Scott's divorce, but not the camera that covers the shooting.
Yeah, and tell us about that whole thing. That seemed to be one of the first things in the case, where they were speaking about the video cameras. And that's been a huge bit of contention in this entire case, where there was video cameras that videoed the area. However, they're saying that there was issues with the camera. Can you try to really lay out for us what they said was the issue with the video surveillance of this shooting?
They breezed over that. They touched on it only in the jury voir dire process.
I'm sorry, only in what process? Can you say it again? You broke up a little.
Yeah, the jury voir dire process.
A jury selection process, okay.
Correct. They said that they're going to have somebody from the Secret Service and somebody from Seagate which is the hard drive company,
okay,
come on and testify about that video, and that there was change orders out for those cameras, and one of the cameras was operational, but it didn't catch any of the activity, and the other ones weren't working.
Interesting. So they're going to have people come testify that there is no legitimate video surveillance of this. You know, what really kind of blows me away, Jim, is we're talking about a Saturday afternoon at Costco. And I don't know if you've been to that Costco, but I formerly used to shop there. And that Costco is unbelievably busy. I mean, if you get through the checkout line in 15 minutes, you're doing pretty good. It is a busy, busy store. And to have all of these people who were told to leave the store, and not a single one of them grabbed some sort of a video phone and videoed what was going on when Eric Scott came out and got shot, just sounds unreal to me. Or maybe that one of the cameras at the Lowe's, which is, you know, a couple hundred yards away, there was no video camera there that may have seen something. It just seems to me very, very odd that there is no video surveillance evidence of this whatsoever.
Well, yeah, for a Costco, they're going to have a camera on that door if they're going to have it anywhere.
Absolutely.
All their security is based around that front door. And I don't know if there was video on cell phones after the incident, during the incident. This one Costco employee who testified that she was one of the last people out of the building when they told her to evacuate.
Unreal.
So there were a ton of people around.
Yeah, it's just unreal that they would neglect having any video surveillance available whatsoever. And it's also interesting to me that a personal friend of mine, as a matter of fact, I was the best man at his wedding some 15 years ago, 14 years ago, and he happens to be the lead detective for Las Vegas Metro in the Southern Nevada, Southern Nevada Regional Organized Computer Crimes Task Force. He was the first detective ever assigned to it. He's still there. He's the lead detective. If anybody knows how to get any information off of any hard drives from a computer, it's this guy. And yet they sent it off to somewhere in California where they have their own hands off, as if that's going to show some sort of impartiality where they're actually conducting the investigation themselves, and that there also should be okay and show impartiality because they're professionals with Las Vegas Metro. The whole process, Jim, just makes me sick.
Well, yeah, that's somewhat confusing because there's a story that a reporter got word from the police that there was nothing on that tape. I think it was George Knapp. But then they're also saying, we've never seen the tape, the hard drives were empty, we did everything we could to recover the tape.
So we're hearing two different stories, and I wonder...
At least two, you're dealing with Metro.
And without having anybody in Eric Scott's defense, his attorney Ross Goodman, or anybody able to question this matter, it sounds as though we'll probably never get to the bottom of it. Jim, stay on the line. We've got more to come. We're headed into the break. Folks, stay tuned. We do have Jim Dunsing, special guest here, reporting on the Eric Scott Coroner's Inquest. We'll be right back right after this break.
You're listening to a guy who packs a gun to shoot the bad guys and packs a mic to shoot his mouth off. Bill Carnes and 2A Radio are back.
And welcome back, guys. Again, we have Jim Dunsing on the line. Jim Dunsing, who spent the day yesterday in the Clark County Coroner's Inquest hearing into the investigation of the Las Vegas Metro cops, basically their homicide of Eric Scott. Now, Jim, are you going to be back in there today?
I am.
Now, they plan on stretching this thing out for, I think, 4 or 5 days. Are you planning on being there each and every day?
I plan on being there for every single minute of the hearing.
Excellent. So we can count on your report each and every night, or every morning the next day, I would hope.
Absolutely.
Good. All right. Well, now, of course, we certainly appreciate this because there's just so many people that can even fit in that courtroom. How many people is it actually holding?
The main courtroom is 16D, and it holds approximately 3 rows worth of people.
And
the overflow room is downstairs. It's 1B. They typically do traffic stuff in it. It's got you're not enrolled.
Okay, so were you actually in the actual courtroom, or were you in the overflow?
I was in both, but for the duration of the hearing, I was in the overflow.
Gotcha,
but I understand. What they did was when they brought the jury in, they kicked out the people that were there except for the family. And when the jury was done being selected, they opened the seats back up to the public, but I was already downstairs.
Gotcha. Now, did they have room for a separate room just for press in that area in the main courtroom?
No, the press, they've got a pool camera, and then Fox, CBS, and ABC have a little broadcast section in the hallway. They're aiming out to their little towers on the mountain.
Gotcha, okay. So now tell me about the jury selection process. You were there for that. Tell me how that went down.
They randomly select 11 people, and then they ask them questions about, do you know any cops? Do you know anybody who's been, you know, charged with a crime? They kicked a couple people off for having family members who were felons. They kicked somebody off for, I think, having a family member who was a police officer. And they selected most of the people originally. I think they only removed like five of the people.
Okay. So there's seven people who are sitting there. Now, in a normal court of law, you have 12. And in that same normal court of law, for them to have render any sort of decision, it needs to be a unanimous decision. Now what we're looking at in this coroner's inquest, which is, it has formality, but it doesn't have any real legal binding to it. It has actually no legal binding to it. It's just, it's a formal informality, really, is the best way that I can seem to describe it. They have seven jurors. And
it's actually 11, though.
Oh, I'm sorry, there's 11. And they only need to have 50% of them or more, in this case six, come back with any one agreeing verdict. Is that correct? Just a simple majority?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, so six people need to agree that it's one of three ways. Either that the shooting, the homicide of Eric Scott by three Las Vegas Metro cops was either justifiable or excusable, both of which are, okay, go back to work, no big deal, or the third one, which is criminal, which we only have one case in the history of the Clark County Coroner's Inquest since the system started in 1969 that came back as criminal, and that was during an anti-cop era where the cops actually were legal in what they did, but the inquest jurors at the time didn't like it. And from that point, the State Attorney General's office, in conclusion with the Clark County District Attorney's Office there in Las Vegas, failed to prosecute either of the cops involved in that shooting. So we have basically what is a 00 status, as it would seem, so far, since 1969, you know, we're talking, you know, 40 years, 41 years of history with this coroner's inquest for every officer involved death where they killed somebody in the line of duty. 41 years of 00 status where not a single cop has lost their job or been prosecuted or anything when it comes to shooting a suspect. And it looks like the way that the DA, who's supposed to be impartial in trying to get to the bottom of this, is far from that and just trying to prove or show in the light that the cops were okay in what they did, and even if they weren't so okay, they shot Eric Scott, who they're portraying as a dirtbag, because they don't want to have to prosecute cops, which is just disgusting in my book. And I got to tell you, Jim, I've been working with a couple of people in the process to try to write legislation to be introduced in the next legislative session here in Nevada to where every single officer involved death of a suspect in the entire state of Nevada, which would overwrite the Clark County coroner's process, and everything would go directly to a grand jury and completely avoid this inquest circus. Tell me some of the other things that happened today that seemed at least relatively striking.
Well, what struck me, because I've never been to one of these inquests, was the process. What will happen is the prosecutor will ask whatever questions he has of the witness, and the Scott family attorney isn't even allowed to object to a relevant or prejudicial or leading question.
Now, a couple of things. Let me comment on what you said. It's interesting that they're calling the guy who's directing the questions from the DA's office the prosecutor, because he's not prosecuting anybody. As a matter of fact, he's defending the actions of the cops and the police department as a whole, and there's no one there to prosecute, because the only person that they would prosecute in this case is the guy who's dead. And last time they had a coroner's inquest, about 2 weeks ago, where the cops went in, used false information to obtain an illegal search warrant, went in on a drug buy, which, what was, let's see, there were three or four drug buys in the past, only one was felony level, and they went in there and they killed this guy in his bathroom with a personally owned AR-15, some detective, and because of the testimony of that cop on the stand, the DA all but called him a liar on the stand, and it was still considered justifiable. So anyhow, it's just interesting that he's referred to as a prosecutor, when in this case all he's doing is, it would seem, so far with one full day behind us, is defending the actions of the cops and not prosecuting anybody.
He's prosecuting the victim.
Well, there you go. The victim who's already dead, and further prosecuting him by persecuting his family.
Right.
And I understand that Ross Goodman, the attorney for the family, which is interesting, Ross Goodman and I met in sixth grade. We actually learned to play drums together in grade school and went to school together for many years. He's also the son, the middle son, of Las Vegas Mayor Oscar Goodman. He was actually captain in the Marine Corps, part of the JAG Corps. Anyhow, Ross is the attorney, and I understand that he got ticked off enough at some point in time where he had a bit of an outburst in the courtroom. Did you witness that?
I did. I think you're referring to one of the doctor's testimony for 30 minutes was completely irrelevant to everything that the inquest is about. And Goodman objected to the irrelevant question, and before he could even finish stating his objection, the judge quieted him down because he's not allowed to speak at the hearing. And in fact, he threatened that if he did it again, he'd be removed from the hearing.
Interesting. So let's not try to get to the bottom of this. Let's not try to find out what the deal is. Let's go by the rules and constrain everybody that we can, and try to go from there.
Right. Well, the family is allowed to ask questions, but here's what they have to do to get the questions asked. They have to write down the question. Then they have to hand that written piece of paper to the judge. The judge has to read it and decide he actually wants to ask it, and then ask it.
Now, question, is that real time, or do they have to submit these questions prior to the witness's testimony?
No, they have to submit the questions while the witness is testifying. And the family got the witness list at about 9:30 this morning.
Okay, so a half an hour before the inquest actually began. No opportunity to prepare, and all they're allowed to do is essentially submit a question in the way of clarification or potential cross-examination, and the officiating official, who in this case actually is a judge, but not really acting in the capacity of a judge, it could be, you know, the homeless bum Harry down the street could actually officially be officiating this circus. He could be the ringmaster. So the ringmaster then, in this case, Judge Abantangelo, Michael Abantangelo, I believe it is, he will look at the question. They have somewhere to process this through a bailiff or something, the questions they want to ask, and he decides whether or not they can be asked.
And then he himself asks them. And he said on a couple different questions, I'm not asking 82, I'm not asking 33, and then he would go to a different question.
Yeah, and you know, I heard that, and I also know that he asked a couple of questions himself. Now, what about the jurors? Are the jurors allowed to actually pose any questions?
They are. It goes prosecutor, the judge, and then the jury.
Okay, and the judge also includes any family-related questions that he will decipher and decide whether or not those get to be asked.
Correct.
Okay, and he has no control over the questions that the district attorney is asking, these completely irrelevant questions. He has no way to stop and say that's irrelevant, or does he have to allow that, or what's the rules on that?
I don't know if he has to allow it, but he did. I don't see a legal rationale for allowing a lot of the testimony that took place today. But he didn't object to it himself. He didn't say, "Counselor, there's a point here. Can we move along?" None of the stuff that you would see in a normal proceeding.
Interesting. Now,
but the good thing is he has no control over what the jurors ask. They don't present their questions to him and then ask them. They ask them straight from the jury box.
Excellent. So they ask them in their own voice.
Correct.
Well, it would be very interesting to be sitting in on this one as a juror, at least from my perspective or yours, to actually be able to ask some of these harder questions. I wonder if the jurors are allowed to ask the ADA a question such as, "Can you please explain to me, Mr. Assistant District Attorney, where there is any relevance whatsoever in your line of questioning in a single word that came out of this witness's mouth? Can you please explain to us or me or to the court and everybody here how any of this is relevant to the roughly 5 seconds worth of contact from the moment that the police saw Eric Scott leaving the Costco until he was on the ground lying bleeding out?"
Yeah, I think a lot of them had that on their mind. I know one of the questions that was refused to be asked by the judge was a question by the family about the cops' use of painkillers and prescription medication. Since we spent an entire day on Eric's use of prescription medication, what kind of medicines or drugs or what have you were the three officers who pulled the trigger? What were they on?
Oh, and so the judge did not allow that question?
Correct.
Okay, so it's very interesting because Eric Scott's father, Bill Scott, who's really been leading this crusade over his son's homicide, actually posed on his own blog on, ericbscott.com, I think it is, or maybe it's just ericscott.com. I think it's Eric, E-R-I-K-B is in whatever his middle name is, Bill, who knows, scott.com. I believe that he posed on there something along the lines of how this entire coroner's inquest is completely unconstitutional because it is entirely one-sided and the judge himself can control virtually everything when it comes to the information that is really posed in this and all of the testimony and all of the questioning, which is nowhere near constitutional effect. However, I guess kind of the drawback is, the fallback position is, that this is, although it's a formal hearing, it has informal results. And if the state attorney general's office decides that they wouldn't wanted to prosecute any cops involved with this, they could direct the Clark County District Attorney's Office to do exactly that, regardless of how the coroner's inquest goes. But classically, historically, in the last 41 years since we've been seeing these inquests on every officer-involved homicide in the Clark County area, what we've seen is that regardless of how the jury comes, whatever the jury says, except for the one time where they said, okay, it was criminal actions by the cops, all of the others was justifiable or excusable. The district attorney has said, well, yeah, you know, we can't prosecute because the coroner's inquest found that it was justifiable or it was excusable. Except for the one where it was considered, where they did come back through the inquest process as saying it was criminal, the district attorney's office said, well, they may have said it was criminal, but we can't find any criminal wrongdoing. So if they come back as criminal, the district attorney's office could say, well, you know, we can't find where that was, so we're going to refuse to prosecute. But if it comes back as excusable or justifiable, they say, well, you know, they came back as excusable or justifiable. Our hands are tied. We can't do anything.
It sounds awfully politically convenient.
It does, doesn't it? It seems just unbelievable to me. And one of the groups I'm going to try to get online that I'm not a fan of the ACLU in just about any occasion. Every once in a while they get something. And right now, they're really fighting. They've been fighting for years against this Clark County Coroner's Inquest process and how lopsided it is towards the cops. And they are trying to find a solution, but they're trying to find the solution at the county level by getting the county commissioners to actually go along with making some sort of changes. They made a couple years back. They haven't made any sense. I'm going to try to work with them to where we can actually get it to the point where it's at the state level and there's a state law going on with the whole grand jury thing. Jim, stay on the line. We're headed into the last break. Guys, stay tuned. We'll be back in just a minute after these messages. You're live right here listening to 2A Radio. If you live in a state which allows Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories, and you either have an interest in or already own Class 3 NFA items, the process for an individual to own these items includes photographs, fingerprints, obtaining a letter of permission from your police chief or sheriff, and a full personal background check, which is spread across the whole federal system. Until now. Forming an NFA trust eliminates the requirements of letters of permission and all personal data and background checks in purchasing and possessing NFA firearms and accessories. NFA trusts offer a level of anonymity as well as flexibility in the purchasing, possessing, and storage of your Class 3 NFA firearms and accessories. To learn more about forming a secure and flexible NFA trust at a fraction of the cost from attorneys, visit www.billcarnes.com and click on the NFA tab. That's BILLCARNS.com and click on the NFA tab.
As long as politicians attack our rights, Bill will be fighting for them. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes is back.
Back on!
And welcome back again, guys. We have a special edition of 2A Radio. Jim Dunsing reporting, who is in the Clark County Courthouse at the Eric Scott Corners inquest hearing. And, Jim, again, it was, what, 15 people were on the list to testify yesterday. Only five actually did. Do you have any idea what today is going to shape up as, who we're going to have testifying?
No, I don't. And that witness list was just the 15 for yesterday.
Okay, so each day they need to submit a new list of witnesses, so we don't know who comes tomorrow or the following day?
I'm not certain. They didn't get halfway through today's list, so I don't know if they'll submit a new list for the next day's hearing or if they'll keep working off of that one.
Okay, do you have any idea who the 10 or so people are who didn't testify on day one, who those are?
I believe they're mostly Costco employees.
Okay, Costco employees. So we don't even know. They only submitted a list of 15 who were supposed to be for day one. We have no idea who's on the list beyond that. I would imagine if they start running out of time and, you know, there's 5 days scheduled for this, and after 5 days they have half or only a third of the people, I would imagine the people who are going to be left off are probably, and mark my words, going to be the people who said, Eric Scott did not pull a gun on the cops. I was standing right there and witnessed the whole thing. They gunned him down after shouting three different sets of commands simultaneously. I'd imagine those are the people who will not be testifying.
I'll do you one better, Bill. It doesn't matter how much time they have. If they had 10 years to do the hearing, those people would not be called because Eric's family doesn't even have the right to call a witness and have the prosecutor ask him questions.
Interesting. And, of course, since the DA's office historically wants to see the cops exonerated and justified in all of their shootings so that they don't have to prosecute the cops that they actually work hand-in-hand with, that they certainly won't want to call these people. And if they do call them, they'll keep the questions highly limited. Okay, yeah, I will like to say that I didn't see Eric Scott with a gun. Thank you very much for your testimony. You're excused.
Yeah, I'm sure they won't even make the jury stand.
Excellent. Well, that is just another hosing of the American public by the cops and the district attorneys who have their own ulterior motives. Jim, thanks so much for spending your time calling up. I hope to hear from you again tomorrow about what happens a little bit later today.
Be my pleasure.
Great. All right, guys. Thanks very much again to Jim Dunsing for calling in. He's spending his own time there. And guys, Gosh, I got to tell you, we won't spend as much time tomorrow on it, but we want to hear a little bit of a summary as to what happened today. So we'll be back tomorrow with all of that.
I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive, and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule.
Thanks for tuning in. Bill will be back tomorrow. Now go side in and shoot straight. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. Learn more about Bill at BillCarnes.com. Send your comments to Bill at 2aradio.com. I will not-